Hare Krishna. Good morning, everybody. We welcome everybody to Shri Shri Radha Kalsanji Dham, Dallas, Texas, USA. Glad that you all chose to be with us by telephone, internet, radio. The classes here, a lot of other activities here in the temple room are also recorded. And by the grace of one of our community devotees here, Prema Sindhu Prabhu, all this gets posted on the internet. So we thank you very much for joining us. If you happen to miss a class that you want to hear, maybe we have a very important person speaking, then you can always go to radhakalachanji.com/audio. That's the site at which the temple activities are recorded. Those are for audio recordings. There's also radhakalachanji.net that you can go to and see what's going on in the temple room in real time. So this morning we're going to be reading from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is part two, 11th canto part two. It's in two volumes. So this is the second volume of the 11th canto. And we're going to be reading from chapter 28, a chapter entitled Jnana Yoga. And today we're going to be looking at text number 11 and 12. And on our board for reciting the shlokas today, we have only text number 11. So we'll read that in the Sanskrit and repeat it. And then we'll go and we'll read the text and the purport in English. And then we will go to the text number 12, in which the Supreme Lord gives an answer to the questions that are raised by his great devotee, disciple, Sri Uddhava Prabhu. Before we do that, we'll have the invocation to the Supreme Lord. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jai Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashura Nandana Bhajajana Ranjana Yashura Nandana Bhajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Manachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Nitai Gaura Premananda Hari Hari Bo. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajaka Charja Hastu Tarasata Sri Srimad's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajaka Charja Hastu Tarasata Sri Srimad's Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda ki, ISKCON BBT Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki, ISKCON Guru Parampara ki, Sri Rupshi Sanatan Bhatta Raghunath, Sri Jiva Gopal Bhatta Dasa Raghunath, Sat Goswami Prabhu ki, Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur ki, Premse Kohu Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasari Gaura Bhaktarind ki, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shamakun Radhakun Giri Govardhan ki, Sri Vrindavandam ki, Sri Mathuradam ki, Sri Mayapur Navadvitam ki, Sri Jagannath Puridam ki, Sri Sri Radha Kalachandiram ki, Ganga Devi ki, Jamunamai ki, Tulsi Devi ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Samaveda Bhakta Brind ki, Brihat Badanga Transcendental Bukit Prasharam Distribution ki, Nutai Goda Premananda, Hari Hari Bo, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namare. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaudapari Pachanini Nivishesha Shunivari Pachanide Shidani. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim yasam tato jaya madirayat nasta praishwa badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatyuttama shloke bhakti bhavadinaishtiki grantaraj shimad bhagavatam ki jaya. Today we'll chant first chapter, text number 11 in chapter 28 of the 11th canto. And we'll go word, let's do line for line.
Atmavyayo guna shudha. Swayam Jyotir Anavrita Agnivad Daruvad Asid. That should be Achid, shouldn't it? Agnivad Daruvad Achid Deha Kasyeha Samsriti. Again, Atmavyayo Guna Sudha Swayam Jyotiranavrita Agnivadarvad Achid Deha Kasyeha Samshriti.
Chant, please.
Atma Vyaho Guna Shudha Swayam Jyotir Anavrita Agnivad Daruvat Achit Deha Kasyeha Samshiti Atma Vyaho Guna Shudha Swayam Jyotir Anavrita Agnivad Daruvad Achit Deya Kasyeha Samshiti.
Okay.
word-for-word translations. Atma, the spirit soul. Avyaya, inexhaustible. Aguna, transcendental to the material modes. Shuddha, pure. Svayam Jyoti, self-luminous. Anavrita, uncovered. Agnivat, like fire. Daruvat, like firewood. Achit, non-living. Chit is usually means intelligence, doesn't it? Or knowledge. So achit means just the opposite. So achit, it is translated here as non-living. Deha, the material body. Kasya, of which. Iho, or iha, in this world. Samshriti, the experience of material life. And the purport is, the translation we'll read first by the disciples of His Divine Grace. The spirit soul is inexhaustible, transcendental, pure, self-luminous, and never covered by anything material. It is like fire, but the non-living material body, like firewood, is dull and unaware. So in this world, who is it that actually undergoes the experience of material life? That's a pretty profound question being raised by Sri Uddhava. So would you repeat with me? The spirit soul is inexhaustible, transcendental, pure, self-luminous, and never covered by anything material. It is like fire, but the non-living material body, like firewood, is dull and unaware. So in this world, who is it that actually undergoes the experience of material life? And the purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The words anavrita and agnivat are significant here. Fire can never be covered with darkness because by nature fire is illuminating. Similarly, the spirit soul is svayam jyoti, or self-luminous, and thus the soul is transcendental. He can never be covered by the darkness of material life. On the other hand, the material body, like firewood, is by nature dull and unilluminated. It, in itself, it does not have any awareness of life. If the soul is transcendental to material life, and the body is not even conscious of it, the following question arises. How does our experience of material existence take place? So that's the intelligent question by Sri Uddhava. And we're going on to read text number 12, in which Lord Krishna, who is known as Bhagavan, is going to begin giving an answer to that question of Sri Uddhava. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Yavade. Since we don't have it written on the board, we won't repeat it. Yavadehendriya pranayir atmanah sanikarshanam samsara palapam sthavan apartau arpatau pyavivekina. Kind of hard for some of us Westerners to be able to pronounce these Sanskrit terms nicely. Translation to this verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, as long as the foolish spirit soul remains attracted to the material body, senses, and vital force, his material existence continues to flourish.
although it is ultimately meaningless. And there's a short purport to this text. Here the word sannikarshanam indicates that the pure spirit soul voluntarily connects himself with the material body, considering this a most fruitful arrangement. Actually, the situation is aparta, useless, unless one uses one's embodied situation to engage in the loving service of the Lord. At that time, one's connection is actually with Lord Krishna, not with the body, which becomes a mere instrument for executing one's higher purpose. Very simple and pretty clear explanation. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamaya Dharati Swabrantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Dutta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagvajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Savadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sundar Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneswari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Karadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Tamal Krishna Goswaminiti Namane. So before we begin, I'll read these translations again. The spirit soul is inexhaustible, transcendental, pure, self-luminous, and never covered by anything material. It is like fire, but the non-living material body, like firewood, is dull and unaware. So in this world, who is it that actually undergoes the experience of material life? And now Lord Krishna is going to give the beginning answer to this question. Now, this is text 12. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, as long as the foolish spirit soul remains attracted to the material body, senses, and life force, his material existence continues to flourish, although it is ultimately meaningless. Today we're going to do a little bit of analyzing the situation of the soul. And the first point that is made here is that we need to understand about the covering of the soul. So the body is compared with firewood, which means the body in itself has no cognizance. It is not aware. So in that regard, it's like the firewood. It contains something within it that does have potency, and it has perception, and that's us, the living entities within the material body. But just like there is fire within the firewood, even though the firewood itself is dull, it's nothing but a stick of wood, still it has within it fire. And when fire is set to that wood, then the fire that is in the wood actually comes out, and it exhibits two qualities, luminescence or luminosity and heat. And that's very much similar to what we experience in lightning also, isn't it? When lightning comes through the sky, it illuminates a large portion of the sky and the earth. And it also, as we understand it, it has heat in it, because it can rip a tree apart. And when you look to see a light where lightning has hit a tree, then you will see it charred. And sometimes lightning is responsible for setting fires. They say out in the western part of our country, there are many fires out there, and there some of them are not due to human participation, but some are due strictly to the lightning that strikes. So the soul is compared with a fire. From the soul, the evidences of the soul is awareness. In other words, consciousness is the symptom by which we know that the soul is present. And when the soul leaves the body, then the body very soon becomes very dull, and it starts converting back into the elements of the earth from which it came, just like firewood. If you leave a piece of firewood out in the woods, or even if you leave it in your backyard by the fence, then we come back after a year or two, and there's practically nothing but rotten wood there. And if we wait a little bit longer, even it turns back into the elements from which it came, which is mostly from the soil, some from the air and some from the soil. And the fire, of course, in the firewood comes from the sun. It's what causes the tree, the plant, to grow. So there's a difference, though, between the soul and fire. It is stated here that fire cannot be covered even by darkness. And we know that to be true. If this room is completely dark and somebody enters with a candle, the candle helps to eliminate the darkness. So it's luminous. It's a luminous thing. And similarly, when the soul is within the body, it is covered, but covered very thoroughly. And about the only evidence that you have that the soul is present, well, the only one that is Srila Prabhupada has mentioned is that the soul exudes consciousness. So we can tell then that the soul is present. If anybody asks you for proof, how can you prove that there's a soul inside this body? And you can say by consciousness, by the effect that it has on the body. And when the soul is not present, then the body is no longer appears to be alive. Actually, the body is never alive. The body is always dead matter, isn't it? Just like wood is dead matter. But when the soul is present, it's just like when the firewood is lighted by another fire, then we see that there is fire existing within that wood, because there's more energy that is given off than is required to start the wood burning. Did you realize that? So therefore, we sometimes use fire. I use fire in my house to do part of the heating in the wintertime. I like to have a wood heater in my house. So I do. I have one. And we can see that when you put several pieces of seasoned wood into the wood heater and you set fire to it, before long, it's producing enough heat that it can drive you out of the room. And if you open the door of it, you would see that it produces a great deal of light. So light and heat are evidences that there is fire inside the wood. And so consciousness is the evidence that there's a living entity, there's some kind of intelligent force within that body, because otherwise the body could not do all the wonderful things that we human beings can do because of the presence of the soul in the body. But just as we were saying, when the soul is no longer there, then the body is just an empty shell. And it's amazing sometimes to us that who have come into contact with this Krishna consciousness movement, that so much care is given to try to preserve the body. You know, some people go out and spend thousands of dollars for a nice box to put the body into. And what do they do with it then? They put it in the ground covered up with dirt. So that over a period of time, not only is the body inside the box returning to the elements from which it came, but also the box itself begins to deteriorate.
And unless it's made of something like gold, if you came back and found it, the box later, dug it up and took the box out, you see that there was practically nothing left to it. So this is kind of a frivolous activity. It has no real purpose except to make somebody feel that they have given proper respect to the person who was within the body. So the covering of the soul is by the choosing of the living entity. The living entity has chosen to leave the spiritual world and wander into this place of darkness, this material world, which is full of darkness. And it would be completely full of darkness were it not for the light of the sun, which is illuminating the entire universe. Some people say that there are other stars in the universe that also give off light and heat. But according to the Vedas, the sun is the only, is the main luminous object. In some places it is said that the moon is actually luminous also. And you know what is causing the luminosity of the moon? I think it's kusha, the grass. It's a type of grass that that is said to grow on the moon that produces a different kind of light from that of the sun. It's a cool radiance that the moon produces, and therefore it's very lovely to us to see the moon especially a full moon coming up over the horizon. It's very beautiful. And if you live in the mountains, as I once did, then you get the pleasure sometimes of seeing the moon come over another mountain range, and then it becomes luminous. It illuminates the entire area around which the living entity is standing. So there's a reason then for the soul becoming bewildered, and that is that when he enters the material world, the material energy of Lord Krishna then covers the soul and with a certain amount of ignorance and forgetfulness of what he was. So the soul has a tendency to forget his own original nature. I've got a friend on Facebook who asked me a question yesterday, and he had invited me to look at a website that he has. And in that website, I went and looked, and almost every entry has something to do with the politics. And so I wrote back to him and said, I really don't have too much interest in the political discourse. I said, what else do you have? And then he sent me to a place where I could see the two books that he has had published, and they're available to buy on Amazon. And I wrote back to him, and I finally said, what I'm really interested in is what you've been reading lately. He told me that he'd been doing some reading in Buddhism. And I said, I'd like to know what your reflections are and what you've been reading. So then he came back to me with a question. He says, what is the most important change that has come in your life since you were in high school? We both went to high school together. He was in the band. I was in the band. And we were separated by time for many decades, actually. And then somehow or other, he became interested in what I was doing. So he sent me a message. Apparently, he saw something that I had sent on Facebook. So I began answering his questions. And anyhow, I told him that the most important event that has occurred since I got out of my youth was to meet a person to come into the presence of a person who could give me answers to the following questions. And I presented those questions to him, that one of the first of which is, who am I? Where did I come from? What am I supposed to be doing? What is my destination upon the end of my stay in this body? In other words, upon what they call death. What happens to me, the person within the body? And so this is one of the things here then, is that when we come into this material world, we forget And so you might ask the question, why does Krishna let that happen? And the fact is that we would not be too much encouraged to stay in this material world and try to find pleasure if we knew where we had come from. And if we knew whose material energy this is in which we are wanting to play and find some pleasure. So we are bewildered then, and into believing that we can find happiness and pleasure, enjoyment with this material body. So this is considered to be a really good packaging job that the chief engineer of our universe, Lord Brahma, has come up with. With any kind of body, either human or animal, generally there's a very thin covering. For the human being, it's just a covering of skin that covers up the entire body. It's considered the largest organ in the body, the skin of the body. The largest organ in the body. And it covers the entire body with a thin, thin layer which can be very, very attractive to other people. And if you consider then what is under that layer of skin, then you realize that the body is not that attractive a machine. It's a biochemical, organic machine that the soul is within. So if somebody gave you a bag that consisted of all the ingredients of the body, but in separate layers in a bag, you'd have skin, and then you might have muscle and blood and fat and pus and bile and urine and stool, and they gave you the bag and said, here, now go enjoy yourself. Well, that's actually what's happened to the living entity coming into this material world. We've been given a body that is repulsive. It's actually a repulsive thing unless you really, really take care of it. You know, bathe it once or twice a day, every day. And sometimes people put on sweet-smelling fragrances to make the body more attractive. And women are really concerned about their makeup in the morning that they put on to make themselves more beautiful. And men are so proud of their physique, their muscles, and, you know, the strength of their body and their good looks. And all of these are qualities of something that is actually dead. And it would not be pretty at all in a very short time after the soul left. And yet we're attracted to it. So we come into this material world, we're covered with a body, we're covered with five senses, and we have a great deal of forgetfulness, in other words, ignorance of who we are and from where we have come. So we spend a lifetime in pursuit of temporary situations that will make us happy, that will make the body comfortable and pleasant to be in, And all the trappings that go with it, the house, the automobile, the job, the society that we're in, all of these are different coverings of the material energy, and they're intended to give forgetfulness about who we are and where we have come from. Because Krishna is wanting to fulfill our desire to enjoy in this world. But most of the time, people don't have any idea what is the appropriate way to enjoy this world without garnering a lot of negative reactions. Because every time we eat something, generally it involves the death of another living entity who is in the body of that plant or in the body of that animal that we chose to eat. So that's one of the problems then that is that every action that we perform in this material world has some reaction to it. Some we call good reactions or good karma, and some we call bad. But actually there is no good karma, because even the activities that we perform that bring us equally pleasant activities in the future, reactions in the future, still, they cause us to take birth again within this material world. And the more pleasant this lifetime is, the more we are reluctant
to give up this body and all of the people that are connected to it, all of the activities, all of the possessions that we have garnered in our lifetimes. Very reluctant to give that up. So we wind up gaining nothing that is lasting. So then what do? We begin to look for something else. If we're lucky, in our youth, we begin to wonder, is this all there is? Is this all there is? And by the time we hit 50, we begin to think, was that all there was to it? Here I've given up my youth. I've given up the early part of my life, my strength, my ability to enjoy my body and the bodies of others. I've given those up. I've given up my whole existence in this lifetime for looking for a pleasurable situation, a nice house, a nice car, all the trappings of material life. That's what I have spent my life energy on, my blood, my life blood in my body. My body has had to produce gallons of blood just so that I could enjoy and waste my energy in that way. So if we're lucky then, we begin to ask the right questions. And that's one of the reasons then that it is stated that the most important thing in this material world is what? Suffering, misery. That is the most important thing. It's the most valuable thing in this material world. Because even if we have tons of gold at our disposal and jewelry and things like that, all those things do is to cause us to commit activities that are going to bring us back into this material world, and there's no guarantee that birth will be human birth. So then all that work then was for nothing until we come into the light of knowledge that frees the soul. Ourselves, we are unable to extricate ourselves from our identification with the body. And if you go around and ask people in the society, who are you? They cannot get past the identification with their bodies. Unless they're very fortunate, unless they run into somebody who could enlighten them. So that's what we are, that's what we try to do if we were looking for some relief from the material miseries that we're suffering. And without that suffering, we would not look for relief, would we? There would be nothing to get relief from. If there was nothing but pleasure, and that's one of the big problems that people who have money and fame and reputation and beauty, that's one of those things that they just never get around to asking, what's it all about? Unless they just get completely burned out. And according to what we've heard, there are some philosophies that say, well, you should try your best to enjoy as much as you can in this lifetime. And then once you become tired of it and disappointed with it, then you can take up spiritual life. So there's no need to try to fast and to perform pious activities. No need to do that in the beginning. All you need to do is just enjoy as much as you can, and then toward the end of your life, then you will no longer be able to enjoy so much, and you'll be tired of it, and then you'll start looking for answers. But we say that we need to start early in life trying to develop some understanding of who we are and why we're here. And it helps then to suffer, because suffering is one of the best ways to get people to become introspective and to use their intelligence to do something other than accumulating material stuff. So we encounter those who have learned the truth themselves, and that way we can learn how the soul became forgetful of his own nature. Because that's a question. If I came from some other place, why can't I remember it? If I came from this beautiful place that had no anxiety, it's called Vaikuntha. If I came from this place, why did I ever enter the material world anyhow? So coming into contact with people who understand how everything works then gives us some ideas how it is we became forgetful of our own nature.
And then we the more we hear about who we are and where we have come from, the more we begin to accept that this is the real nature of the self. And the self is, it is said, has three qualities about it, and that is in the Sanskrit, Sat, Chit, Anand. Sat means eternality, means there's never been a time when the soul did not exist, nor is there a time when the soul is coming into existence, nor will there be a time in the future when the soul comes into existence. It is said that the souls, being part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, shares those three qualities with the Lord. Sat, Chit, Anand. Eternality, knowledge, and bliss in our original spiritual state. But we have them to such small degree that it is said that we can be easily overwhelmed by the material energy of the Lord, even though the spirit soul is considered part of the superior energy of the Lord. Still, because of its insignificant size, it's smaller than the tip of a hair, then it is said that the spirit soul can inhabit any kind of body within the material world. And so Krishna has to then give enough inspiration to Lord Brahma that he can create different kinds of bodies for the desires that the living entity has and for the reactions that are coming to him. So whenever we come into the world after the dissolution of the entire universe, we go back into the body of an expansion of Krishna known as the Mahavishnu. And there we stay until it's time then for a new universe to be created. And then we're sent back into this universe to try once again to find happiness. And it's only by coming into the contact with someone who actually knows what happiness is all about for the living entity that we can begin to be free. So once we have come into contact with devotees of the Lord who are knowledgeable, who are enlightened, who are happy, then we can begin to perform activities that will help us also to become free from these bodies, from this bodily concept of life. And how do we do that? By reading and hearing about the Supreme Lord and his abode, his activities, his personal form that he has. Because, you know, there's practically nobody in this universe knows who the Supreme Lord is except for a few select persons. And some of them even have to spend tens of thousands of years on the planets of the gods, enjoying this material existence. So it's not the most favorable place. We call it the heavenly planets. It's not the most favorable place then for becoming extricated from this bodily conception of life that keeps us coming back again and again and again into this material world. So reading and hearing about the Supreme Lord and his abode and his activities and his interactions with all of the other spirit souls that are present in the spiritual world, that's one of the ways that we can become more attracted to that place than we are this place. And what do we read? Of course, the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's one of the three literatures that Srila Prabhupada has translated for us that is essential for our spiritual advancement. The Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. But just it is said that just by reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, reading through it on a regular basis, one can gain liberation from this world. How do we gain? What does that mean, liberation from this world? It means gaining more desire to be in that world without anxiety, world without fear, and that is Vaikuntha Loka. And the topmost planet there, of course, is Goloka, Goloka Vrindavan, where the Supreme Lord has his most intimate pastimes with those souls who are very pure. They don't have any desire except to please the Supreme Lord. And because of that desire and because of their activities being there, then they themselves become extremely happy, and it doesn't end. It just gets better and better and better. So we perform activities then on while we're still in these bodies, activities that are beneficial for us. And one of those is reading or hearing about the pastimes of the Lord and his qualities and his friends. Those, just that activity of reading. But once we have read, then we can actually engage in chanting and talking with other people who are in a similar position to that we have come from, and that is of just gross ignorance. Then one of the requirements, it's a highly recommended action that we can perform, is to give up the association of materialistic persons. So just as we can gain some attraction to the spiritual realm by being in the association of those persons who are enlightened, so we can be kept in this material world by simply associating with those persons who are materialistic themselves, who are looking for some pleasure within this material world. And then we come to find out that one of the most important actions that we can take is to search out a spiritual master. As a matter of fact, Krishna has stated this to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. Tadvidi pranipate na pariprasnena sevaya upadengshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshana. Just seek out a spiritual master, he tells Arjuna. Inquire from him submissively. Render some menial service to him. The spiritual master can give one enlightenment. And why is that? Because he has seen the truth. So taking up the instructions then of a spiritual master is like the final blow to our existence in this material world. Because if we sincerely try to serve a spiritual master, that spiritual master can enlighten us both outside and from within the heart. And within the heart, he performs the same function as the super soul, Paramatma. So it is said that the spiritual master then is the external manifestation of the super soul. So there is no difference in their purposes, the spiritual master and super soul. Both are trying to get us to open our eyes and get knowledge that will free us from being in this material body lifetime after lifetime. So we've analyzed then the situation of the soul. Today we've talked about the covering of the spirit soul and how it's like fire that is covered by dead wood, just ordinary wood. And it's comparing the soul with fire and talking about how the soul tries when it comes into this material world to find happiness. But in spite of all of its activities and endeavors within this material world, when we get to the end of our lives, we found that we have gained nothing that is lasting. Unless we take the spiritual life. And how do we take the spiritual life? First of all, by becoming inquisitive, looking around, trying to find someone who has answers that we don't have. And then we begin to associate with those persons, and they eventually lead us to a spiritual master, the one who is going to give us enlightenment, who is going to accept the service, the menial service that we have to render. And then by that method, then we overcome the ignorance that has brought us and kept us in this material world lifetime after lifetime. So let us then attempt to follow the instructions of the scripture and those persons who are the ones who are proponents of the scripture. And that is to begin associating with or continue associating with those persons who are farther along the spiritual path than we are, and looking for a spiritual master if we don't already have one. And in that way, by serving the spiritual master, by serving other devotees of the Lord, then we can become freed from this state of exalted ignorance that we have, the ignorance that is keeping us in this material world. Hare Krishna. So here we will stop and ask if anybody has any remarks or questions. So you're talking about that which is keeping us in this material world, or that which is getting us out of this material world? Yes, when there's too much enjoyment in this world, and the planets of the demigods are the place that many persons strive to get to because they hear that there is unlimited pleasure there in that heavenly planet. And so, instead of striving for that, which is also temporary, because it's said that the denizens of the heavenly planets, they still have a limited lifetime, even though it may be tens of thousands of years. And then they have to come down to this planet if they have not found a way to get themselves out of this material world. They have to return to this planet or even go lower by performing activities. So people on this planet can choose either to go up in consciousness or down in consciousness, right? And so we, in our attempt to find lasting pleasure in this world, we perform so many activities. And those are what, some of them are nice, they're beneficial, and that's good because maybe their activities are to help other people who are suffering, who are struggling. But the most beneficial activity that we can give to anyone is to give them a piece of literature or begin trying to talk with them and tell them what we have learned in Krishna consciousness. And in doing that, then, they begin the end of their stay in this material world, just as we have begun the end of our existence in this material world. And if we simply follow the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master, at the end of this lifetime, we may not make it out at the end of this lifetime, but if we follow very carefully, then there's a good chance that we will. But even if we don't make it out in this lifetime, we can always come back again and serve again and finally get to the point of helping others to get out of this material, which is one of the things that Krishna really, really appreciates. In the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he says that for one who gives us intimate knowledge of me to others who are not envious, then there has never been one more close to me, never been one more, a person more dear to me. That's the term I'm looking for. There's never been one more dear to me than that person that tries to give this knowledge of me to other people who are innocent. And we take it a step further, too, by Srila Prabhupada's, you know, in his example and his actions. He's taught us that even if persons are not innocent, even if they are envious, still, if they hear the chanting, the loud chanting of the holy names, even outside the temple, out in society, then that's a step in the right direction. At least they have heard the chanting of the holy names, because there's so many living entities that never will get the opportunity in this lifetime to hear the holy names. So then by performing that activity, which our spiritual master will try to engage us in, to help get the other souls out of this material world, we become very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Srimati Radharani, his eternal consort, will bring us to his attention. Oh, Krishna, look, this person is chanting your names. Please give him your mercy. And so when he's recommended like that by Srimati Radharani, then it's very hard for him to decline. He will give us some help. Is that okay? All right, we will stop now. Those of you who are listening in by internet or by telephone or radio, we very much appreciate the fact that you've taken part of your day to start your day with some transcendental topics. And maybe this will help you throughout your day to remember that person that we are aspiring to get back to, hopefully by the end of this lifetime. At least we hope to please him by the end of this lifetime. So we will say, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. Shri Shri Radha Kalachanji Ki Jai. Mahabanchakal Patarubhyas Chai Kripas Nubhye Bacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Anantakoti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai.